When I say more moderate rhetoric, I'm referring to his campaign this year that he's running to be governor of all the people as opposed to 1970. He talked about the black bloc vote.
That's correct.
Now, that's a change in rhetoric. But
well,
am I correct? I just want to make sure I understand it. Your position is that this is nothing more than his own recognition that one, because of his changed circumstances, being one that is now a great sympathy vote for him in the white community, that he didn't need to play the race issue anymore, and that two, for his terms of his national ambitions and to gain national respectability, it's also to his political advantage not to be blowing the old horn. So there's no more mileage in it, and that's why he's changed.
That is correct. George Wallace Knight is currently running for vice president of this country.
So, but you view all of this as nothing more than a strictly political move, reflecting no basic change in attitudes on his part.
Yes, there's been no change in attitude on his part, and I would like the lack of rhetoric, the fact that he omitted this time around was because it was not necessary. It was not in a close race, and that's why. So no, I don't call
Art Fletcher talked to the Republican Southern Conference and whatever they call that thing, Southern Republican meeting in Atlanta last December. He was talking to Southern Republicans. They ought to do more about trying to get black support. He said that his term was that George Wallace looked over Jordan. What he saw was a bunch of black voters coming after him.
I know this is maybe futile speculation, but had it been perceived as a close race, and had he pulled that racial, plucked that racial spring again, would it have worked in 74? Our attitudes changing?
For some, it would have worked in 74. It probably would not have worked as effective in 74 as it worked in 70. So like it was probably less effective in 70 than it was in 60, 65.
That brings around an elaboration.
Did anybody do that in 74 in any statewide contest or any legislative contest where race was openly used as an issue?
I don't recall.
Is that a change from 4 years ago? From 8 years ago?
From 8 years ago. The only person who used race as an issue before was George Wallace 7 years ago. 4 years ago.
What's the Attorney General's race?
Oh, yes, that was wrong. McDonnell Galyon used it when he ran as an independent. That's correct. It didn't help him. It didn't work for him in 70. It worked for Wallace in 70, but not McDonnell Galyon in 70.
But I'm getting at, you think that will work in the future, or is that days gone?
I think its impact will be lessened each by as time goes on. Yes. So it may be used and may work some, but it will work very little. I wouldn't want to say it's not going to work at all. It depends on what happens nationwide. 1965, George Wallace had the guy, had 1966 rather, Lurie Lean ran. He had the 64 Civil Rights Bill over his hand. He had the 65 Voting Rights Act. He had Harold Howe's guidelines on desegregating public education. And he had hooked up the fields. We had our backs against the wall. We got a fight come forward. So you had that climate. This year, the climate is much more subdued from a racial point. At least while the people are probably still dying in the cities from all the diseases they've died with before, we did not have the big city demonstrations taking place. And so the racial climate was somewhat subdued anyway, this election, considering the national climate and the Wallace's ambition. it's easy to understand why race was not a certain factor here. But shift that again 4 years from now, 8 years from now. We got cross city busing and a lot of things that people get fearful about that they shouldn't. Then, of course, you do pick up I'll probably pick up some.
Well, the perceptions of his image, though, the change in his image is working, isn't it? According to the last Lou Harris poll, people see him as different than they saw him in 72.
I noticed that. I think I don't think the question, but if they're calling the Harris, it's what's happening. And it's not without some understanding. He was a guy that rock bottom. Again, so he had no place to go but up. One. Two, that I think with some black people endorsed him.
Didn't that help
greatly? That helped him some. It helped him because, and then you have some of the well-meaning liberal reporters who don't do their homework. And they will come down and do an interview, or stay in New York and do an interview, or do a write-up on Wallace, and there we are. And soon it's published in one of the major magazines or one of the major newspapers, and this is all after all. The average American read the bulk of information he gets from the newspaper from what's happening day to day. So that's another factor to be included there. But I think that the fact that blacks and the liberal press, the press that I have found, that I've been far more pleased with the what I call the Southern press, and I have the Northern press. The Southern writers have been far more, I think, understanding of what's taking place here than the Northern press. I think the guys do their homework better. On particularly as it relates to George, I've looked at it. And, those guys who are writing good George Wise articles are not that little Southern boy who grew up on a farm in Georgia or Alabama.
How about the assertion that he's basically a populist? Originally he was a racial, not liberal, but a moderate, but he's retained the streak of populism all along.
Oh, I think so to some degree. If you look at his taxes,
I was going to ask you that next.
Most of his taxes have been on the average man. He's not taxed these plantation owners.
So where's the populism?
I think he has expired what we would call a populist philosophy, but his actions have been less populist. He still basically is he can't get away from being from this old Bourbon aristocracy. While he was not himself a rich boy, he grew up in that old Bourbon aristocracy in Barber County. And to some degree, that is still, he's influenced by that to some degree. And so I have not been overly enthusiastic about Wallace's populism, so to speak. I think that he does talk about tax breaks for the little man. But after all, he's got some tax breaks too, including some of his memoirs. He sold some. I remember reading it. I didn't go into detail on it, but there's something that I believe that Wallace also got some exemptions from his taxes on his memoirs. So as you proceed in your study, you may want to raise up someone else who knows more about it than I. I'm sure the question of archival history doesn't
matter. Let me get back to that meeting with the black mayors last November.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was this distinction between previous meetings. Here he goes into black mayors, and I'm paraphrasing, but in effect he made a speech that many of them responded to very positively and talked about all of us being God's children, this sort of theme. Is that not a difference?
No, I don't think Wallace has ever been foolish enough to come to a black group and be as racist as he would be for a white group. This group, when he spoke for Alabama State student body 5 years ago, at the epitome of his popularity for what he had done on the racial issue, he talked about building Alabama State University. He picked out a subject that people could live with. So the fact that he said it to the mayors, to me, is not a change in his position. He said it 5 years. He did the same thing 5 years ago at Alabama State University.
Do you think the reason that some of the non-Alabama mayors at that meeting came away impressed, thinking he changed, was that they didn't really know his background?
Well, this is what happens in many. Yeah, this is what happened. Wallace is, first of all, is not a fool. That's the first thing. You got to give the guy some credit for at least being a thinker. He knows how to control the emotions of people. He knows common decency. He knows that you don't go to a man's house pushing down the dresser, turning over the table. So to go into a meeting of black males, he wasn't going to go up and insult those guys. It's not to his advantage. I mean, you know, there are certain common courtesies you owe to the guy on the street. Eisenhower, as much as he probably hated Khrushchev, he extended certain courtesies to it. So I don't praise a guy for extending social graces. That's a part of the guy. He has to do that, if you please. So the fact that he met with the mayors and the guys want to praise him for his social graces, fine. Now that's the way they looked at it. But I don't see how one could walk away saying he had changed.
Well, many people, of course, have linked the change with the fact that he had a brush with death. You're saying that you haven't seen any evidence of the change.
I just really haven't. I just haven't.
Is the fact that he didn't attend the conference of the Democratic Caucus, Democratic Conference meeting this year, an indication to you of no change?
No. I think he was smart for not coming. The chairman of the Alabama Democratic Conference is against Wallace. And Wallace knew he was not going to get endorsed. He knew that pretty much. That the black folk in Alabama were not going to support it. And I don't hardly blame him for not coming.
One of the things that people tell us about him is that he avoids those situations where he doesn't believe he can win. So there'd be no point for his coming.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We beat the hell out of him.
That's why some saw this defeat in the state executive committee of his candidate for chairman as significant. He was there, he thought he was going to win, and he got clobbered.
Surely, they came out with an announcement that morning, Friday morning, saying that the governor was suffering from a slight cold or something and that he might not be able to make it. What they were really doing, counting the votes. And they were doing their last count. And that last
is that
count.
A behavioral characteristic of him that you think is true, that he will not put himself in a position where he thinks he's going to be defeated?
Surely. That's one of his characteristics.
You were at the meeting, right?
Yes, cast my vote.
How did Wallace react to when the vote was announced?
Well, the governor came in and everybody stood up and clapped. I stood up and didn't clap. A motion was made. We'd have a secret ballot. Wallace's man got up and made an impassioned plea that we do not. Well, the chair ruled we're going to have some pass out there. Well, when it was ruled that we'd have a secret ballot, I was not near Wallace. I was on the right side of the aisle. And he was on the far left of the aisle. A person near him said, Wallace remarked that, good gracious, why doesn't he want to open ballot? And that's basically the only thing I heard him say. The only thing I could see was the expression of dismay on his face when the ballot was counted. And that was just a boom, you know, expression of dismay, a disbelief. And of course, he was rather upset about it. He was embarrassed. And his speech that he made after all everything was over was, you could hear it in his ringing in his speech. And he was upset and dismayed over what happened. But that was an example. Of course, the black members of that committee made the difference in that vote. No questions about it.
How do you explain his hold on the state? Most politicians after 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, 14 years are down the tube.
You're right. But this is...
He's at the zenith.
I don't think so. I think he's going down. He's going down. I think he was at the zenith in 68. I think he was going down in 68. Basically, he thrived on racism, and he used it, he just simply kept banging on the fears of the people. And of course, 1966, you see, as I said before, you had three major civil rights bills. So, he was able to come and exploit that. Of course, fate caused that to. One, the person that was headed for victory in this state was killed in a plane crash, Ryan DeGraffenried. So when Ryan DeGraffenried died, that left no one out there, okay? Except Richmond Flowers, who was close identified to the black community, and who had been fighting Wallace all along, and Alabama just wasn't ready for that kind of government. Okay? That's 66. I keep saying 65. 66. Then, in 1970, we had the Brewer-Wallace race, which, of course, a lot of reasons could be given as to why he lost and all that. I need not go into all those, why Brewer lost or why Wallace won. I don't know, any one of the five reasons, maybe, I don't know. And I think his presidential bids also, I think, helped him in his state. I think it really did.
Which is the key to his current popularity now, the accident and his personal misfortunes and recovery from that.
Yes, I think the day he was shot, I recall, and unfortunately, here's some blacks saying, you know, well, we got him out of the way now. And I said, no, I don't think so. Let's defeat the guy with the ballot, not with the bullet. That's not good. I want to have the last hurrah with George Wallace. I live on the ballot. I don't think it's going to come out.
I'll give you a scenario where, starting in 1978, Cornelia runs. Okay.
No.
No?
So, this accident, Agnew's visit, all of this, all of these helped. And there's a sympathy vote. And all of these factors played on.
How did blacks react to the shooting and his recovery?
I don't think that we had blacks, you know, most blacks regretted it. Most blacks regretted it. I just didn't find any blacks of any significance.
You regretted the shooting?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the recovery and his you know, the personal qualities he displayed in overcoming the shooting.
I don't think he was struck by that one way or the other. I think he regretted he was shot. They're glad he recovered. Now, any qualities that came out of that, any other side effects from his own, I don't think blacks paid attention to one way or the other. But basically, that's.
Why do you think the blacks elected officials who endorsed him did so?
I think two or three reasons. One is that you got to know the officials. There are some black elected officials who are not Democrats, who are not Republicans, they're opportunists. I think you had that part in it. You had some officials felt that by supporting Wallace they could get certain grants, LEPA grants. There are some who would endorse anybody who ever talked to them lies. So I don't know who that is in the set pattern. I have someone in mind for each one of those I described there. I was thinking about a particular one of them. But that's why I think it is for opportunity, you know, for personal reasons. I say it's not my friend for political reasons. I opposed him because I just don't think that blacks need to get wrapped up with a man. Wallace is a bad political style. Even politically, it's damaging. Aside from everything else. Because the person who endorsed Wallace will wear that badge another 20 years, long after Wallace goes off the scene. And here's a man who built his career on the backs of black folk. Who built his career by denying black folks the things that they wanted, by, in effect, destroying this state in part, particularly as it relates to racial relations. And to me, it's bad political stock either way it goes.
What was your reaction to Ted Kennedy's visit down here?
I was against it. Told him I was against it.
Before he came?
Yes.
Did he call you or did you call him or what?
He called me.
Why'd he do it?
I don't know. I didn't ask him.
Why'd you tell him you were against it?
I told him that George Wallace had not marched across the new frontier with John F. Kennedy. He didn't help in the Johnson Bill of Grace Society. And that he was running the third party when Hubert Humphrey was trying to keep Nixon out of the White House. And he turned his back on McGovern and Shriver. And I didn't think that Kennedy should lend his image to share a platform with George Wallace. If he wanted to share, if he wanted to pay respects on the South, there were many more top Southern officials that he should have meet with or talk to in many other places he could attend and share his sympathies or his feelings about the nation's problems. He was going to do in the South. I didn't think that was the forum.
What would George Wallace have to do to either convince you he had changed or at least raise substantive doubts that he hadn't changed?
Produce. That is to say,
what would be an example?
Gotta give a lot of put blacks on all committees in Alabama. Employ blacks in all positions in Alabama. And then recognize that I made a mistake.
And acknowledge it.
That's right. That's what I said. And I don't think that's too much to ask, but to put citizens on committees. For citizens in jobs. And say to the citizens,
he has no blacks on his staff in any club.
No. Unless he's got him as a little secretary or something.
Right. Nobody in a
no.
Above the secretarial level, right?
No.
There.
That's right.
And he doesn't even have an assistant for minority affairs in any.
No.
How would you feel about him as vice president or president?
I would oppose Wallace and the person who put him on.
Did you read Bill Shannon's piece this morning?
No, I have not read.
His argument is that Wallace has not changed his stripes at all. That for the Democrats to try to woo him on the assumption that they're going to change him by 1976 is crazy.
I read someone from the Associated Press did a story on that last week, I believe. He was, in effect, this reporter was giving a reaction of key Democrats who attended some meeting in Washington not very long ago. And I was somewhat pleased with the thinking of the key Democrats now. And I see now a shift that people can realize one thing, that Wallace is not going to, we cannot have Wallace on the ticket. And we might as well now start planning to win without him. And this is, I think, the attitude we ought to take. And I think that the Democrats are whistling Dixie. They think that Wallace has changed. They think that, because after all, people go to the polls. Blacks don't have to vote for the Republicans to hurt the Democrats. They just don't have to go to the polls at all. And the Democrats still hurt. And at this point in time, I just don't see any way. See, to put somebody, well, suppose he's on with Kennedy. I don't care if he's on with me. It doesn't make him right. So by putting him on with Kennedy, it doesn't make Wallace right. I don't need Kennedy. I don't need Humphrey. I don't need anybody. I don't need Maynard Jackson or anybody to tell me that Wallace, what Wallace is. And the fact that somebody says he's all right, it's not going to make me believe he's all right. So my position is very clear.
You would accept Wallace as being a changed man if he did something substantively, took action to show that he changed. Is that basically?
I would accept him as a changing man, not a changed man. Because if he did all that, he would do all that if he thought that'd get him on the ticket. So that wouldn't necessarily change. I would look at it with some possibilities.
What's your reaction to Strauss's efforts to keep Wallace happy, keep him in the party?
I have not been enthusiastic about any of the national figures paying homage to Wallace. So that's one. I've not been in politics to some degree. I'm not unmindful of what I have some understanding, I guess, what the chairman's doing. I would point this out. I frankly think, though, that many of the Democrats are thinking that Wallace has more power than he has. Wallace got the hell beat out of him here in Alabama when he endorsed a candidate for the state legislature, and especially election about 2 years ago. In North Alabama, black people went up there. There's only a few blacks were there. It's not a black area. It's San Martin. And
what race was that?
A fellow by the name of Baker. What was Senator Baker's first name?
Was he the winner or the loser?
He was the winner. Wallace endorsed the loser. Wallace ran long.
Where does Baker live?
In the same area. It's in Jackson County, Alabama. And Wallace put a lot of effort in that, money and everything else. He lost. Same thing happened when he endorsed Ben Reeves. Wallace endorsed Ben Reeves against Bill Dickerson. Bill Dickerson, the Republican congressman. All right? Got the hell beat out of him.
You optimistic about blacks' participation in politics in Alabama?
Yes, I think that we blacks have a golden opportunity. And I'm relatively pleased, frankly. I was somewhat disturbed that we didn't elect more blacks to the legislature.
How many were elected?
15.
How many in each house? Yeah,
there were, what, two?
Three.
Three.
It was, what, 12? How many?
13 House members and 2 Senate members. And I frankly think we should have gotten 4 Senate seats and about, we should have had at least 17 House members. So we're about 6 seats short. We should have come out of that with at least 20 from the legislature.
And you got 15.
Mm-hmm. We had anticipated. In fact, we had predicted 15 to 20. That's what we predicted. We never said more than that. We said 15 to 20. With luck, you might get 21, 20. But we was 15 to 20. And we got 15. That was the minimum we figured. And I thought we should have come out at the maximum.
Have you ever run for political office?
Yes, I ran for the legislature in 1970. I lost. I ran in a 3-county area, Perry, Marengo, and Sumter County. At that time, we had multi-county districts. And I must have lost by, I think, 600 or 700 votes, something like that. And I decided this time not to run. However, I am in a district that's black, at least 70% black. In fact, a black person is representing the district now. One of the a former chairman of the Alabama Democratic Conference. He's in his late 60s.
Who is that?
His name Rufus Lewis. We talked about it, and I urged him to run. And
or even further back to the early movement days, could you have foreseen the changes that occurred in racial relations in this state?
Probably have to say no, not to the extent no. I've always felt, though, that people basically will support leadership. And I've always thought that the leadership in Alabama was causing most of the problems than the guy on the street. I've never, you know, we've lied about that guy. We've talked about the Rosenshuer and the Mays and all those folks. Those guys didn't have the minds or the know-how or the means to concoct all the resistance and all the problems, all the court battles, legislative acts. So to me, it was always a leadership question. But in all fairness, I never thought that even the membership of the citizens would come along as far as we have come. Of course, now we have a subdued type of situation. We see, we're still living in this where a lot of problems are not being faced. You still have massive discrimination in employment in other areas. I think we've made more progress politically than probably any other. I think the 1965 Voting Rights Act was probably the most significant piece of legislation passed in the whole civil rights movement. Probably short of the, I think the Brown decision and that act are probably the most significant pieces of legislation. I think one thing that came out of the civil rights movement, if we can say it, came out of the 60s, that it made all of us look at ourselves and face our problems, at least recognize we have problems. No longer now does a patient claim he's not ill. We finally recognize that we're sick, and so we now try to do something about it. I think that's the most significant thing. We recognize our illness. And by recognizing our illness, then we start treating it. Before that time, we never even recognized it. We said we were not ill. We were doing fine. That was the guys on the outside saying that we were sick, but we were doing fine. I think that came out. That's one of the most significant things as I look back.
Anything else? Anything else we should have asked you that we didn't?
No, I think probably we could, maybe in terms of the party structure, while blacks are not adequately represented, and to me, adequately representation means to me that you would reflect your population. That's my measuring rod. Adequate representation means that about approximately the population. And I think about the State Democratic Executive Committee. And while blacks are on the committee, and certainly not adequately represented, I do think that the blacks' involvement in political affairs and the executive committee has helped the state tremendously. I think Bob Vance. And another thing we have to look at, there are some young whites in this state. Probably give some negative points about what has really happened. But there's some hope. You got men like Bob Vance, men like Bill Baxley, men like the Supreme Court of Alabama. Five of the guys on the Supreme Court were endorsed by the Black Caucus. So in my work, we do a lot of litigation. I'm prone now to start thinking about going to state courts for some cases I would not want to take to federal courts. State officials are recognizing the importance of blacks as voters. No question. They've toned down the attitudes. No candidate now will say that I won't employ a black, because we are, for example, we had President of the Alabama Public Service Commission. That job does not have a lot of patronage in it, but the Public Service Commission, the candidate was running for office. He wanted our help. We all want our utility bills lowered, but that's fine, but white's going to benefit from that too. So, he had only one appointment, so we exchanged. Made him public service commissioner, he took the other appointment. What we are trying to do, and I think we probably have arrived, of course we have not won the governor's chair, so it's a different ballgame, but we are trying to do, as I said in the outset, that we want it so that no politician can get elected without blacks. And it's not our desire to control politics in Alabama. It is simply our desire to participate and enjoy the benefits therefrom. Black people serve on committees. Black people serve in state government. Black people serve throughout. Not only black, white people too. Because I am concerned about what white person is appointed to a position. I would not be satisfied by having a black placed at some high level office. Plus, competency and everything else. And all around him, the whites who are appointed are vicious. So I'm concerned also about the white person who gets the position too. And whatever we've done. So who's on that committee to do what? So same thing about the legislature. Our organization supports black and white candidates for the legislature. And this is the thing that I've seen emerging. These candidates seek black support. I guess this tells us all something.
How do you assess the role the federal judiciary has played in Alabama?
I think it's been very significant in some cases. It hasn't been with a damn in others. Frank Johnson, I think, has been great. That's why his pictures hang on my wall. I think. That's my respect for him. He's been great. Had not have been for Frank Johnson, things that black folk have, said we wouldn't have it. And when George Wallace stands up and says, well, now, schools integrated in Alabama, Frank Johnson did. He talks about black folk, we got 25% state troopers, Frank Johnson did. When he talks about all these other things, Frank Johnson did. So my respect for Frank Johnson is very high. My respect for the judiciary has been very high. I think Frank Johnson has done a superb job, and the Fifth Circuit Court's done a reasonably good job. I think the Southern District Court in Mobile has been lousy. I think the Northern District Court in Birmingham has been lousy. So I think, again, not the judiciary has not, all in all, I would say, it's been very poor, except for Frank Johnson, but he's done a superb job. And I guess if he would run for office, I'd support him. I would have been what party ran. That's how much I think about it. Whatever else said about Alabama, whatever Alabama's place in the future is, that man influenced. Why historians will never probably give it because they won't go into that. They'll probably get the political thing. But I would hope that you would do one thing and put your book together. You look at the role of the federal judiciary in ensuring blacks their rights. That role has been significant. And there's not a single man in this country who has given more, or who's done more for the cause than Frank Johnson. I would rate him with Lyndon Johnson. Now that was my president. I was from Johnson man. Lyndon Johnson. Frank Johnson. I don't know of any officials have done any more for the cause of black. This nation, those guys, and both of them were Southerners. So so that means let you know I'll be trying to get a Southern on the ticket for 1972.
If you get a Southern on the ticket in 76, who would
76,
you pick?
76, I mean.
Who would you pick?
It's too early to tell. I wouldn't even hazard a guess now. I just know one I'm against. I don't know yet who I'm for. I don't know who I'm against. I'm against Wallace. Now who the one that I'm for, I don't know yet. There are some good potential men. Terry Sanford, Askew from Florida, probably Bumpus of Arkansas. Those three ring in my head. Of course, it's the George Wallace advantage. Now, George Wallace is in their way. There's no question in my mind about it.
How do you think the Democratic National Committee and Party should treat George Wallace?
I would treat him I would give any special treatment like I treat Terry Sanford and the rest of them.
Yeah. And interview with Joe Reed. No more transcription. This tape.